Lisa. I've been informed by John Almela, our audio technician, that the audio recording when you began your report is not good. It was lost or is not very... maybe you could start over, do you think?
Certainly. I will start in terms of the findings, but I would just like to say, and I will talk about this with the board again, and there were various reasons why we had to have so many interruptions, but I am going to ask that we have this conversation again at another board meeting where there's a little bit more structure, because I know that we're running out of time and have to be out of here. But the report that they are referring to is a report called Foreclosed, which is was put out, a study put out by the United for Fair Economy. And it's just interesting. The people who are leaving the room, a lot of them are the ones who are making the comment about what racism is, that it's stupid, that it's ridiculous, that we don't know what we're talking about. Some of the people who should at least be here to listen to this, but they speak exactly to the issue that's going on. As I'm talking, you people didn't want the public comment, so please don't interrupt me while I'm talking right now. Thank you. Okay, but the report is called Foreclosed. And while we were having these conversations, I thought it was very important to have some background, because nothing is in a vacuum in terms of what racism really breaks down to being. Well, other people can call it a game and reduce it to names and think they can define for people. They don't live it. They don't know it. And yet they think that they can define for me and people who look like me what it is. And I'm never going to listen to that from people who tend to benefit by it. But anyway, key findings in terms of what's going on with the issue of foreclosing on homes. This report estimates, I'm only going to read a brief part of it. It's a 58-page report, but I've just taken the first couple of pages. But some of the key findings that this report found was that they estimate that the total loss of wealth for people of color will be between $164 billion and $213 billion for subprime loans taken during the past 8 years. They believe this represents the greatest loss of wealth for people of color in modern U.S. history. Another point. Based on improvements in median household net worth before the current crises from 1982 to 2004, it would have taken 594 more years for black African Americans to achieve parity with whites. But due to the current crises, now that was during the time of 1982 to 2004, but with the current crises with foreclosures on homes, it is likely to make it much higher than 594 more years. Another statistic. Home ownership rates for black African Americans compared to whites are already starting to take back recent gains. At the current rate of improvement from 1970 to 2006, parity will not be achieved for another 5,423 years. Now that's just, these are just some of the statistics in terms of racism. Yeah, but it's serious. People are living this. I'm going to, because part of this discussion was also supposed to include a report in terms of the race and nationality policy. But I just want to say, because this was supposed to be a discussion, and you will notice that a certain percentage of the people have left in this room. And part of the reason for that is because, in my opinion, of course I can't speak for other people, but I know what goes on here. Excuse me, could we please get point of order, please, public? We had the chance to have an interaction, but people of the public did not want that, and because on this board I had to defer to that. So please, you're not going to have it now. But this is my case in point. And some of the directors on this board...
Excuse me. We have to have order.
Thank you.
Please, sir.
Thank you. I'm going to ask Bob to report on the race and nationality policy.
Good evening, everyone. The debate and struggle over the representation, involvement, and role in decision-making for the varied communities of color in this country has been going on for a long time at the Pacifica Radio Network. It really goes back particularly intensely to the movements of the late 60s and early 70s, and because of our short time tonight, I'm not going to really review that history, but it's a very rich history of a lot of grassroots struggle that transformed the face, literally and figuratively, of Pacifica stations, of all five Pacifica stations eventually. By the time we get to the period of the 90s, when the mainstreaming forces of a variety of racial and cultural backgrounds had taken control of the top management and board of the network, that gave rise to the tremendous mass movement of primarily listeners and some staff to take back that network. And when that triumphed, which I was privileged to be one of thousands of people part of, when that triumphed in 2002, the task that all of us were looking at was how to reconstruct the network that had been almost destroyed by hostile forces in a way that would be truly inclusive. And at the second interim board meeting that I attended in Los Angeles in March of 2002, one of the loudest cries for justice came from the black and Latino programmers who had been purged by the management at KPFK. And they were demanding that their communities, whose voices had been almost completely silenced, be heard again on the airwaves, and that those communities have genuine representation. And their struggle and their intensity really inspired several of us who were attending that meeting. This is long before I was on the board, just as a concerned activist, to get together and start talking about how can we look at the large outstanding issues of racism and the lack of affirmative action and the lack of inclusion of communities of color at every level of Pacifica, from the board composition to management to the paid staff to the on-air hosts and the on-air producers and the volunteers at every level of the organization. And what that led to was a workshop that I convened at a conference on the future of Pacifica in June of 2002 that became one of the most remarkable experiences of my political life. What started as a two-hour workshop developed such an engagement that what ended up being a racially diverse group of more than 25 listeners, activists, and staff from four of the five stations met for over 18 hours to discuss anti-racist initiatives for the network. Our discussions were rich and thoughtful, and the highlight was a fishbowl designed in which people of color shared experiences while the white folks just listened on the outside of the circle. And then together we reflected on what we had heard. The result of this dialogue is very intense, and at times, strong differences emerged, but the result was a set of recommendations, and I'll just read you a couple of them because I think they remain today a landmark of a roadmap for this organization to move forward. The group collectively agreed on these points. Our goal, I'm quoting, "Our goal must be nothing less than the realization of a non-racist and non-classist culture of democratic inclusion within Pacifica. This in turn can allow the network to play a cutting-edge role in educating and empowering oppressed communities nationwide in the fight against racial and economic injustice. We must become the change we desire. By transforming our own practice, Pacifica can become a model and beacon for many movements for progressive social and political change in the U.S. And then it talked about the importance of doing this through ongoing education and dialogue on these issues, both internally with all the stakeholders, but also on the air, and that there must be goals, guidelines, and implementation mechanisms to assure the attainment of this goal." And keep that in mind, because this is 5.5 years ago, and we're going to come back to how that hasn't really happened. And then the final point was, lest anyone think that this was engaging in some sort of hierarchy of oppression, we made it very clear that we believed that equally important as the issues facing people of color and immigrants, Pacifica must fully address the needs of and operate equitably toward other oppressed groups in society, especially women, lesbians, gay men, bisexuals, transgendered people, people with disabilities, working class and poor people, young people and old people. All of these populations face interconnected forms of oppression. And based on that, we came up with a list of 8 recommendations, which I don't have time to go into tonight, but I've made copies available to the board, and I think it's time to recirculate that to the public. It included trainings and workshops, programming on some of the internal Pacifica issues about how to include these communities, looking at guidelines for the staff composition to start to approach the composition of our signal areas, all of which I should add, according to FCC maps, are more than 50% people of color, all 5 of our signal areas, not just the inner city, but the entire metropolitan suburbs included area. Resources for staff diversity, apprenticeships, training programs, internships, making sure the committees reflect the racial and cultural composition of the area, local programming on racism issues and national programming as well, and then mechanisms to implement and evaluate and make sure that these are not just words on a page but actual on-the-ground changes in how Pacifica does its work. This was in 2002. We made a collective presentation of about 15 of us to the board that day, and the board unanimously adopted all of our recommendations as binding policy of the network. The next year, the board reaffirmed that, and when the first elected board happened in 2004, late in that year, thanks to the efforts of my colleague Ray LaForest and a variety of other producers from different stations, black and Latino producers or listeners who were from different stations on the board, it was again reaffirmed, and at Ray and another colleague's initiative, the first step towards implementing one of these points was taken by asking the executive director to move forward on the point of a national programming collective on issues of race and immigration at Pacifica to develop national programming. Sadly, that didn't actually happen. That was never implemented until last spring, when there was finally the first meeting of to form such a collective, and I believe it had 2 meetings, and I've never heard any more about any follow-up meetings. This is a pattern over the last 5.5 years.
Just to let you know, we have about 5 minutes, and we're going to go to the web workers report.
Sure. Okay. Let me wrap up quickly. In January of 2005, when I first was seated on the board, after a lot of consultation with producers and listeners of color, primarily, and concerned white folks in the network, we came up with a series of 5 motions that we brought to the board meeting. One of which passed outright, that was which I'm the most proud to have been part of, but it came straight from the Latinos at KPFK, was to create a national daily Spanish language progressive news program that would be offered to all of the 5 sister stations and to all our affiliates, and would create the basis, and has indeed started, to expand Pacifica listenership to Latin America itself, which is a very great step forward. Also, to institutionalize anti-racism training on an ongoing basis throughout the network. Also, to establish a commission on affirmative action. Someone asked about that earlier. That failed to be included in the bylaws despite an intense struggle to guarantee the representation of the communities we serve at all levels. A commission to work on that. And then the beginning steps, which my colleague Mike Martin was very helpful in trying to find funding to establish a staff position in the national office to coordinate, because a lot of this work doesn't happen if there's not somebody paid to make it happen around racial inclusion, affirmative action, and so on. Unfortunately, after some forward motion in the Finance Committee, the financial crisis hit that year and the money was not available, and it hasn't moved forward. So in sum, I would just say that a lot of great work has been done by a lot of people to vision the future of racial and cultural inclusion at this network, and we now, hopefully this year, can really make a commitment to act on it, implement it, and be the change that we want the larger society to be. Thanks.
Can I just say,
okay, Lisa.
Just to close it out a little bit, part of this discussion initially was supposed to be about discussing implementation factors and how we can improve and looking at certain things and assess how far we progress and where we need to go. Again, I'm going to ask at, you know, later date that we have this conversation again where it won't be, you know, uninterrupted, so we can have it. But the other part of this in terms of racism is also empowerment, and empowerment of communities, empowerment of people of color, and the right to sit at these tables and to represent. As you can see, of course, we need more diversity, but so many of us are here, and I want to get as many people from Newark and all these communities as I can at these tables and let as many people walk out the room who want. That's what it's all about. Thank you.
Margaret?
Yeah, thank you, Lisa, and other members of the committee for your thorough report. What I'm wondering is that there hasn't really been an opportunity for members of the board to ask questions or comment or any such thing. I realize that it is late. We have another report waiting. But I'm wondering what could be done about that. Is this to be continued at another meeting where there will be an opportunity for members of the board to, you know, discuss these matters a bit? And I don't know if there were any motions that were to come from this. I'm just a little at a loss about this.
Do you have a suggestion, Lisa?
Well, I propose that we have this conversation again, and like I said, in an uninterrupted forum structure. I know this was beyond the control of the board, but it's a very important one, and I think that is important because all of this was supposed to happen and be a conversation and a discussion that everybody could participate in. And at the, I think it should be an in-person meeting, definitely. So I will propose it for the next in-person board meeting that it be a part of it. Thank you. I make a motion that at the next in-person board meeting that we have a presentation like we were supposed to from the racism and sex to continue what we've already started talking about pertaining to issues of diversity, inclusion, racism and sexism throughout the Pacific Coast.
Lisa, Pete has just informed me that if we want to continue, he's okay with starting his report tomorrow morning, and maybe it's up to you.
Point of information,
remember,
tomorrow morning, it is the last day of our board meeting, and we have a really important session scheduled for tomorrow morning,
okay.
And I would hate to really jog that. I would prefer if that part of the agenda is going to be moved, that it not be moved to tomorrow morning, where we'll be discussing these other matters.
All right, maybe we've... Okay, go on with your motion, Lisa. I'm sorry.
No, my motion is that I just move that we continue this discussion at the next in-person board meeting.
Okay. Is there a second?
Ambrose,
is there any objection to the motion? Kiana, you have the motion? Okay.
Okay, the motion is that we continue this discussion at the next board meeting.
Okay. Hearing no...
In-person board meeting.
Okay. Okay, hearing no objection, that motion is approved.